Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim Potts back on the air with his co-host, Jamal. We always appreciate the fact that you tune in on your Sunday evening or your Sunday afternoon to share the time with us. Today we're going to be talking about a number of things. Before we get into that, though, obviously by this point I'm sure everybody's heard the sad news about Kobe Bryant and his daughter and the other people that were on that that helicopter crash today. So we're just sending the shout-outs and condolences to all of the families that were involved in that, including the other little girl and her parent that was with her as well as the pilot. You won't hear as much about them probably as you will with Kobe and his daughter, but they should be remembered also in your prayers. Okay, Jamal, we got a lot to talk about today. One of the things we're going to do is talk about how the United States created this bit of terrorism. So as promised last week, we would follow up, you know, to let them know how all this started. And then we're going to be talking about the some information from the HR corner in terms of political talk at work. And then the use of the internet for terrorist purposes. But before we do that, let's talk about some news at hand this week. I know you had a couple of things that you wanted to mention that were in the news. So what's going on out there?
A couple, something very tragic this week happened over in, where was it, South Riverside County, I believe it was Temecula area. Six kids decided to play Ding Dong Ditch on a random person's house. They rung the doorbell and took off and jumped in the car. However, the person that they did this to ended up being a very angry person, jumped in his car, chased these kids down, and rammed them off the road. Three of the six kids were killed in this tragic event. I mean, we're talking about Ding Dong Ditch, teenagers just doing something.
Okay,
just,
Jamal, help out some of the people out there in terms of Ding Dong Ditch.
Okay, Ding Dong Ditch is when somebody rings the doorbell, and before you can answer the door, they're gone. So you at the door looking like, who's ringing my doorbell? You know, usually this happens in neighborhoods where there's a bunch of kids or apartment complexes, or nobody's injured, nobody's like insulted or anything like that.
It's just no a more practical somebody, joke.
It's a practical joke. Ring the doorbell and take off. Mm. Well, this one got out of hand, and unfortunately, this led to three kids, teenagers. They were all, I believe, 16 years old. I think there was one that was 13, and, you know, that died in something as ridiculous as a simple prank.
You know, I did have some information on that also. And, you know, the sad part about it is, you know, would you consider that road rage? Because I've talked about road rage on the show before. So this is a situation where actually it ends up being a form of road rage, but it's rage, and it gets in his car and kills these three kids. He has been arrested, and he is being charged with murder, or, you know, who knows, probably vehicular manslaughter. He's definitely going to have some charges against him. Go ahead.
No, I heard that he possibly might be eligible for the death penalty on this one, too.
Really?
I read about, they said that he could possibly receive the death penalty. I don't know if this is going to go that far, but that's...
All right. Well, let's just talk about the death penalty. What would... Okay. Under the law, okay, the death penalty is for premeditated murder.
Right.
Okay? Whether or not that's going to be premeditated, it's probably going to be hard to prove. I mean, first of all, when somebody does something out of anger, you're looking normally at manslaughter, heat of passion.
Right.
So, second-degree murder could be an option, but that doesn't bring the death penalty, because second-degree murder is wanton and reckless disregard for human life, as an example here.
Okay? Right.
So, and again, that one doesn't bring the death penalty either. Normally, when you have the death penalty, there's a felony involved. So the felony murder rule kicks in with the intent to kill. That normally happens like doing a robbery or something like that.
Right. You said it was a felony. So I know a hit and run is a felony, and it was a hit and run. Yeah. But I'm not saying that it counts as the death penalty. I'm not sure, but I know that conversation is being had.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't hear that, but that's okay. Who knows? You know, right. Sometimes they go for the maximum, but I just don't see. I mean, they could actually start with that charge, because of how bad it was. But they're going to have to prove premeditated murder. Now, the other thing is, when he got in his car, how far did he go before he actually rammed him? Was it 15 minutes later? So he went there with the intent. I mean, maybe they're coming from that angle. Well, you know what? We'll just follow it and see what happens.
Right.
But I think there was another issue you wanted to mention also, something about some razor blades and door handles or something.
Also in the news this week, guys got to be very careful. We always say be vigilant. Apparently, there's been people sticking razor blades in people's car doors. So when you go to open your car door, you're not paying attention. You're not expecting anything crazy to happen, but people have been sticking razor blades in people's car door handles to cause them to severely cut themselves when you go to get in your car in the morning.
Wait a minute. So you mean, so when you get, so when you stick your hand into the door handle to open the door?
Correct.
Okay.
So it's a place where you can't see it.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, you know, we've had, this whole week has been a bad week, quite frankly, because we also had some issues along the lines of the Kansas City. Remember when Kansas City Chiefs won last week, there was an issue about a shooting. I think a few people got killed, 15 people were injured because somebody just walked up and started shooting. Then you had the Hawaiian police ambush. We were just talking last week about the about police officers being careful, and then two Hawaiian police officers, one male, one female, was ambushed as well. And then we had a shooting in Seattle. So it's really been a week of violence.
Yeah.
You know, sad but true, to make a long story short. So anyway, sending shout-outs to the victims in Kansas City, Seattle, and obviously to the families as well as the police officers who were killed. I think that made number 11 and 12 police officers already killed this year. Not all by shootings, by the way. But I always talk about that because it's just amazing to me how many die in the course of a year. I mean, police officers die in the course of a year. But anyway, look, let's talk about and get into some of this other thing. But before I do that, there's a couple of things I want to mention. Is that if anybody's got any comments that they'd like to share with us, give us a call at 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929, if you've got any comments you'd like to share or any questions that you may have. And then, of course, if you want to get on our email blast, just email us at, or text us rather, at Potts Associates, and text that to 22828. And enter your email address in. Or you can always send us an email at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. The last little announcement that I want to make is as a reminder to the listeners that I'm going to be speaking at the Valley Industry Association on Tuesday, January 28th, from about 11:45 until about 12:30 or so, 12:45, whatever it may end up being. So that's at the Hyatt Regency in Valencia, by the way. So I think tickets are still available, so just get in touch with the Valley Industry Association if you're interested in attending. All right? Okay. Let's look at some of these emails, Jamal. Let's see what we got going here. Jim, by any chance, did you see on the news where the construction worker got killed, the construction worker killed his boss because his boss was a Trump supporter, and then he placed the American flag by his body? What are your thoughts on that killing, Jerry, Nashville, Tennessee? Look, here's the deal. You know, look, there's a lot of people being inflamed by everything that's going on right now out there. I mean, one of the things we're going to talk about today, Jamal, is about politics and talking about politics at work.
Absolutely.
And here's a situation where this guy stabs his boss because his boss had a different viewpoint than him. Any of this kind of behavior, in my opinion, is always going to be wrong. To answer your question, I'm not getting into the rights and wrongs of what they were talking about, but merely the fact that how do you kill somebody simply because of the fact that they have a difference of opinion than you do, especially politically speaking. You know, I mean, that's the same as, you know, this thing with road rage or anger that you bring out. I think it's a ridiculous killing. He's probably going to end up with a manslaughter charge because it was a heat of passion, so to speak. And my thoughts are, I think it's horrible, you know, not to take sides with it.
No, absolutely. 2020 is going to be an election year, and you know, there's going to be a lot of things going on in the elections, and you know what I mean. So I think this year particularly, we got to just be careful of even having the subject of politics because people get really passionate about it, as if it ruins their day-to-day lives, man. And people just, you know, they're really passionate about this stuff. You know, they say the two things you don't talk about is religion and politics, you know, things that they're most passionate about. So, you know, if you can, just try to avoid these conversations at work, because nobody needs to lose a job behind it. Nobody needs to lose their lives behind it. Nobody needs to get injured behind it. So just have these conversations at work and just kind of steer clear or check the temperature of the conversation. If it seems like it's escalating, voices are raising, go ahead and eliminate it.
Well, we're actually going to be talking about that, you know, a little bit later in the show. But I think, you know, you're bringing it up now, so I think it's a good point to make about what you just said. But we'll do some follow-up on that as we go along. Let's read this other email, too. So, Jerry, what is our opinion? Our opinion is we think it's horrible, okay? It's not a matter of whose side the person takes or whatever. But when you kill somebody just because of the fact that they express a different, you know, political belief than you do, I think that that's totally outrageous. And whatever happens to him, in my opinion, he's going to deserve. Next one, Jim, I thought about a question that breaks away from your usual discussion on terrorism. What is, and Jamal, I didn't tell you about this one, but I thought that this would be a good one for you, all right? Anyway, it breaks away from your usual discussion on terrorism. What is your opinion on switching the Super Bowl from Sunday to Saturday? LOL, Adrian, Brooklyn, New York.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous. That's what I think.
You know, the reason why I brought this up is coincidentally, wasn't there a discussion in our office about
this
also?
There was a discussion. You know, these young people, they cry too much, man. That the whole notion, it's on your day off. Usually Sunday is your day off, okay? What does Sunday have to do with Monday? You know what I mean? And the Super Bowl is like in the afternoon. Well, I guess back on the East Coast, it's a little bit later than normal, okay? You got a responsibility to do. Get to work the next day. I used to have to be to work. I'm a Giants fan. In 07 and 2011, I had a route that started at 5 o'clock in the morning. And let me tell you something. I had a good time that night, but I also recognize I had to be to work at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? Don't change our tradition of Super Bowl Sundays. To
Adrian, I think you created something over here. But at any rate, no, I get it. You know, Sunday, Adrian, you're right. Today was such a somber day. This is kind of a little laughter for us from that perspective. But you're right. It has nothing to do with terrorism. But I will say, as a reminder, remember on the show, for those of you that are the regular listeners may remember that I talk about all these situations. When you have like the Super Bowl, the World Series, March Madness, don't forget what I told you. Safety is an issue. Also, what did I tell you? They also have situations where they're using, what's the word I'm looking for? These things with sex with young girls, prostitution, those things surround these kind of events as well. So it'll be interesting. Because I said last year after the Super Bowl, how many people got arrested for this business about, you know, sex with children and things of that nature. So that pay-for-sex play type of thing is also out there. Now, wow. You didn't know about that one, Jamal.
No.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Last year after the Super Bowl, they actually, I think they arrested like 30-some-odd people because of the fact that they have the, because think about it, all of these people that are coming in, these people are drinking, and they have right. people out there with prostitution and then sex with kids under a certain age and things of that nature. It follows all of the major events in a number of major cities.
Wow.
And I think this isn't a Super Bowl in Florida this year? I think it's in Miami.
Is it Florida?
Yeah, well, that's where Miami is.
Okay. Well, I know that. For whatever reason, I thought it was in New Orleans this year, but I could be
is
wrong.
Is it? I don't know. Yeah, I think it's Miami. I think it's Miami. Okay. Well, okay. The Giants aren't in it, Jamal, so I guess you wouldn't know where it was.
Yeah, so why should I care, right?
Exactly. You know, and now if your boy Eli retired. But anyway, let's move on. At any rate. Okay, next one. So, Adrian, there it is, okay? Our feeling is it should stay on Sunday, I think, is what we're talking about here. Jim, in your discussion on terrorism, I don't believe I heard about terrorism, terrorist acts in Canada or South and Central America, just the United States and Europe. Why is that? Peter, Medford, Oregon. Well, Peter, first of all, that's not accurate. They've had terrorist act in Canada. Maybe one of the shows is what I'll do is explore a little bit more on that. But they've had it in Canada, and they've also had it in Latin America as well. And let me just tell you, this goes back to 1992, the first major attack. So this isn't something new. I get it. You don't hear about it all the time. But Hezbollah has been very active down in Latin America. And the 1992 event, just to give you an idea, they had where a car bomber, suicide bomber, crashed into the embassy down there. And they actually ended up killing, and I got my little research here on that. So just to let you know how bad it was, the suicide bomber, explosive, the Israeli embassy, 29 people killed, 242 injured in Buenos Aires. So this is not something new. It does happen. You don't hear about it as often, but that was a major event. Now, in 1994, the Jewish Center in Buenos Aires killed 85 and injured hundreds. And those were the deadliest attacks ever in Latin America. So I wanted to look up exactly the worst attacks. Those were the worst attacks. They've had other things because, again, anytime you have a terrorist organization, and like I said, Hezbollah, for some reason, is very active in those areas. So just to let you know, yes, we've had it in Latin America, and we've definitely had it in Canada as well. In Canada, the attacks were against the mosque in Canada. And those have happened periodically, once again, going back to the 1990s. We just haven't heard about anything lately. And remember what I talk about on the show, Peter. I talk about the fact that we have a tendency to forget. When these things happen, if it doesn't touch us personally, we don't think about it. It's here, it's bad, and then we move on. But it's always good to put the reminders out there that this stuff's not new. So at any rate, I hope that answers your question from that standpoint. Okay, now, Jamal, let's get into this thing, because last week we were talking about the United States and how they got involved with this business about, you know, terrorism and why it's all being, you know, pointed in our direction, basically. And, you know, remember last week, for those of you that listened to last week, we talked about how even the CIA is the one that pushed Osama bin Laden and then later on ended up basically taking his life because of the fact that things kind of turned against us. But I did my research on this, and Jamal, you know, we talked about this, and it actually goes back to 1914, guys, all right, when the first of this, I want to say from a political standpoint, started. So the first time that a Western power actually got soaked into politics, it was because of oil in the Middle East. Now, right. That should not be surprising.
Right.
The British soldiers landed in southern Iraq to protect the oil supplies and then, you know, from neighboring Persia. I don't even think they call it Persia anymore. It's got other names now. So these things change over the years in terms of the name. And at that time, the United States really did not care about the Middle East oil or any political designs, because, again, we're talking about the early 1900s. And then later on, our ambitions were focused toward Latin America and the Caribbean. Then it went to East Asia and then the Pacific. Now, as what happened was at the end of World War One, President Woodrow Wilson, he told them basically, Britain, we don't want to get involved over there. So that was a good thing. That was a smart thing. Now, I told you, this is early 1900s.
Right.
Fast forward. Go ahead, Jamal.
Well, kind of staying in that same era, around the 1908, 1914, from what I understand, Iran discovered they had like an abundance of oil.
Right.
But they didn't have the technology to pull this oil out.
Right.
So UK, along with Britain, decided, hey, we can help you guys out and pull this oil out, but we want 51% of the profit.
There you go. It's all about the percentages.
Right.
Right. Well, then is what happened. So that's how they started introducing themselves into
right.
it. All right. Then the Truman administration, after World War II, American troops were actually stationed in Iran to help transfer military supplies to the Soviet Union and protect Iranian oil. Then the British and the Soviet troops were also stationed on Iranian soil. And then after the war, Joseph Stalin, who was the Russian leader at that time, withdrew his troops only after President Truman threatened him. So that means Russia was out, England was in. And you know what's going to happen. Eventually, we figured it out.
Right.
We need oil.
Right.
You know, so they turned around, and that's how we ended up getting in there. Now, Truman is the one that helped create the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is NATO. And they made it clear to the Soviet Union that the Middle East would be a Cold War hot zone, which means that they didn't want them in there. So now we're starting to look at this a little bit differently.
Right. And I think part of it too, whenever you start realizing there's always going to be somebody that realizes, like, wait a minute, they're making too much money in our country. They have to go. And once they voted for it, they started nationalizing their oil, the UK had a problem with that because it was going against the deal that they had. So therefore, the new powers is saying, hey, we're going to take over what's ours. UK didn't like that. Now they got American allies. They got a whole bunch of more allies. And they started putting sanctions on them. So you're taking it over, but you're not going to make as much money as you was making with us.
It's always about the money. Then we're talking about the Truman administration. Next thing you know, the Eisenhower administration jumped into the middle of it after the Truman administration. Three major events define Dwight Eisenhower's Middle East policy. He ordered the CIA. Now listen to this, guys, because you hear a lot on the news right now about, and you've heard before about how America has done things in other countries, right? Now, once again, this stuff is not new. So, in the Eisenhower administration, as what happened was Eisenhower ordered the CIA to depose Mohammad Mossadegh, the popular elected leader of the Iranian parliament and an ardent nationalist who opposed British and American influence in Iran. Mm-hmm. The coup they took over, so you know it was a coup d'etat, severely tarnished Americans' reputation among Iranians who lost trust in American claims of protecting democracy. So there it is between 1953 and 1960.
So that's where the hypocrite part comes in, you know, because the guy was voted in. We might not have liked the fact that he was voted in because it didn't work to our best interest, but he was their chosen man. As far as we know, he was voted, like what we always preach. And then once we had a coup going on, we put in the guy we wanted.
Well, listen, once again, it's kind of tough with all of this because here's the deal. 2 years later, you know what happened? Eisenhower ordered the first landing of United States troops in Beirut to protect the regime. So there it is. That gives you an idea about how long it's been that we've been over there now in the Middle East with troops. All right. Now, during the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration, things were a little bit lighter because now you're talking about the Vietnam War was going on. So our interest was a little bit different in terms of what we were paying attention to, so to speak.
Right.
But the Middle East burst back onto the American foreign policy radar with the Six-Day War of 1967, when Israel, after rising tensions and threats from all sides, preempted what is characterized as the impending attacks from Egypt, Syria, and Jordan. So here we go. Now it's starting to escalate. So because it's starting to escalate, you know what's going to happen. We're going to get involved. Johnson, all right, that's President Lyndon Johnson, he basically put the United States Navy Mediterranean Sixth Fleet on alert, and also compelled Israel to agree to a ceasefire. So now we're starting to even get more and more involved in the politics over there. So that gives you a rough idea about how we got started there. So now when you look at this, what's the country that's in the middle of this? Iran. Okay, Iran. All right? Or Iran, however you want to say it.
But I'm sorry, but let me say this too. We did meddle in it, but at the time, the guy that we put in power, I can't currently think, Shah, put him in power.
Right.
He actually liked some of the Western influence.
Right.
And they started to begin to grow as a country. They started having women vote. They started, the number of students increased dramatically. They also had the number of schools also increased dramatically also underneath the Shah.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something productive that came out of it. But once again, you had those groups that we don't like this Western influence over here, even though it is benefiting the people overall, and the economy started to grow also. So there were some positives that came out of it, even though the CIA was involved in causing the coup.
You know,
Jamal,
you know, those of us that are older that lived through that time frame, because I'm sure you got your information from, you know, doing your research, et cetera. But the attitude toward the Shah, all of that changed. Okay,
right.
I think it started changing during the Carter administration. I'm trying to remember back now. But here's what happened. In 1979, all right, Iranian students backed by the new regime, because it was a new regime that came in.
Ayatollah Khomeini.
Under the Ayatollah Khomeini, Jamal, that's right. Okay, and when the Ayatollah Khomeini came in, all right, Now Iranian students backed by that new regime took 63 Americans, okay, at the United States Embassy in Tehran hostage. And they held on to 52 of them for 444 days.
Right.
Okay? Now, they finally released them the day that Ronald Reagan was inaugurated as president. Now, you tell me, is that, you know, did they decide that, oh, no, yeah, not there, under his watch?
There was a sense of fear, you know, that this guy might take action.
Well, the difference between possibly Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Okay? But, yeah, when he got inaugurated, they turned around and released these people. All right? And they said that under the Carter presidency, it set back American policy in the region for years. All right? And but the rise of the Shiite power in the Middle East had begun at that point. And that was it. So you had the Reagan administration. But when the Reagan administration was there, then it stalled. Okay? It wasn't right. much of an issue, you know, for years and years.
Is this what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength?
That was his basic philosophy. That's correct. Okay. Then after that, of course, now we're in situations where it's through the next administration, well, through the administration with George W. Bush between 89 and 93, where we then turned around and had the situation with Saddam Hussein, okay, because he went into Kuwait. Okay, so here we go. So now we can see how this Middle East situation is really developed. Okay, through all of these different presidencies, all these different administrations over the years. And then the next thing you know, we did Desert Shield, became Operation Desert Storm. And then, you know, throwing the Iraqis out of Kuwait. So, again, you know, we've gotten involved in this Middle East situation now for, you look at this, 60, 70 years, maybe even longer than that, actually. It's even longer than that. So that's how the ill will started developing. So when we talk about domestic terrorism, why do these people dislike us? I don't know, Jamal. I think that some of this, I have to tell you, is that we kind of shot ourselves in the foot with this to a certain extent.
Sometimes when you think you're doing good for all the right reasons, it sometimes come back to haunt you. And unfortunately, that happens.
Right. You remember this movie, Black Hawk Down?
Yes.
You have any idea what that was about?
Over in Somalia? I actually knew somebody that fought in that.
Oh, is that right?
I actually worked with somebody that did. But I wasn't sure the whole story. I can't think of the general's name.
No, not you're thinking about Idi Amin Dada.
It wasn't him.
No, It was Muhammad Farah Adidi.
Okay.
Okay? I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. But he was the leader of a brutal Somali militia. Okay? And it's what we ended up doing was sending troops over there under the Bush administration. And that really became a problem. That's the one, like I said, in Black Hawk Down. Actually, 18 Americans were killed and 1,500 Somalis were killed during that time. All right. Now, interesting is what people don't know. Who do you think was among the architects of the attacks on the Americans in Somalia? That was in Somalia.
I'm not sure.
Osama bin Laden.
It's not surprising.
Osama bin Laden, believe it or not, was a Saudi exile. He was living in the Sudan at that time.
Wow.
So he was an exile living in Sudan at that time. And at that time, he was really not known by us. And coincidentally, later on, as I told you about how the CIA, we mentioned it last week, about how the CIA turned around and actually supported him.
Right.
And then after we supported him, he turned it around and then was against us. So, yeah, but that's what happened. So that gives you a rough idea about some history on some of this, because I thought the way that the person who wrote in and asked about how this all began, I thought that was very interesting to do some research on it and to actually try to figure out it happened.
Did the U.S. Was the U.S. supporting Osama bin Laden during Afghanistan's fight with Russia at the time?
I don't remember exactly. I'd have to go back and look at my notes to see exactly when we started supporting him, but I don't think that it had to do with us supporting it. It could have been. But I don't know that he was in I really don't remember now whether he was actually in
that fight.
Yeah. But who knows? I mean, he was in that whole region. Okay. Right. I mean, I'm talking about Somali here, okay, where he was, and then so who knows? It could have been It could have been.
Right.
I don't know. But obviously he was somebody that didn't like us. I mean, he used our money and then turned against us. But that's how it is sometimes with all of this business. You know, we'll actually never know the truth to any of this. But that's why I really like getting heavy into the politics side for right now, especially because everything's just too heated, which actually leads into our next discussion. Jamal, what is this business about politics in the workplace and not talking about politics?
Politics in the workplace, man, it can make friends hate each other. And the incident that we mentioned earlier with the guy who actually killed his boss over, you know, over his political comments, and he just disagreed with them. From what I understand, they were even friends. You know, his boss actually picked him up to take him to work. And something like this just leads us to somebody's death, you know. I think we always got to, like I always say, man, check the temperature, man. If voices are escalating, somebody got to let cooler heads prevail, you know, and calm the situation down and just kind of stay away from it. If you know somebody and you have a friend that gets, that really flies off the handles about politics, you know what I mean? You got to be kind of careful, unless they live kind of far on the East Coast somewhere, and then you could just hear by phone and that's fine, you know, but.
You could always hang up the phone. But yeah, it's true. I wonder if any of our listeners, if anybody has that kind of issue at work or has any comments about that, you can always call us at 818-602-4929 and give your opinion about talking about politics at work. Not necessarily taking sides, but at least talking about the issue of politics, whether an employer should allow it, not allow it, whatever the case may be. Now, they did some surveys out there, and basically the surveys determined that actually 42% of the people that responded, Jamal, said that they avoid talking about politics at work.
That's the best thing to do.
You know,
and I think that's the smart thing to do.
Another 44% that said that they talk about it, but shut down the conversation when it gets heated. And 14% say they engaged in lively political debates at work. Lively. I'd like to know what the definition of lively is, but I don't know.
Lively means it don't stop. You know what I mean? When one person wanted to stop, the other person keeps going. And it just gets live. It's just say, man, you know, it just, it kind of puts on a production almost, you know what I mean?
Oh, and
it
yeah.
Just,
we actually have gotten calls from clients talking about the fact that, what do you do? Now, there's different philosophies or there's different people out there, ideologies or whatever you want to call them, that people say that it's against the law to tell somebody they can't talk about politics at work. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that. Right. You know, when you tell me it's against the law, I mean, there's a law to protect. My understanding is that the only time, and I know in California, I believe this to be true, that you cannot take any action against anybody for political talk unless the person is associated with the political campaign.
Right.
So if they're associated with the political campaign, so they're helping on the campaign, and you take some adverse action against them because you don't like who they're supporting, my understanding is that that person is protected. But in general, talking about the fact that people can't talk about politics at work, I don't know. You know, that goes back to, if I'm an employer and I've got a group of people standing around talking about politics and they're not getting their job done.
Right.
Why can't I have that conversation?
Right. Or loud conversations, you know, around.
That might disturb other people.
It might disturb other people around potential customers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think you could talk about politics around customers, can you? I wouldn't advise it.
Oh, you can do it. It's not against the law, but it's not a healthy thing to do.
Right.
I mean, politics and religion.
Right.
Since it's so controversial, so personal to people, I would say no. But, you know, we've had conversations in our own office about politics. And
right.
Look what happens. I mean,
People get upset.
People get upset. And I think that's where management has to come in and control the situation and say, okay, guys, look, you know, let's be, you know, the managers to me have to be the people in the middle, separate it out.
You know, I think, you know, some people get so passionate about it, but what you got to understand in politics, man, and the way our government is set up, every 4 years we have another election. Nobody can do more than two terms. So no matter how much you might hate the current administration, the past administration, this too shall pass.
Well, wait a minute. So you said before years, but you're talking about the president, okay? But remember, some of these congressmen and some of these senators, they get elected for different periods of time. Some of them for 4 years, 6 years.
True.
So it seems like it's more inflammatory
with the president.
With the president.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is what not just the current, it was the current and the last administration. It seemed like people were more, you know, upset than ever. You know what I mean? And passionately upset. We can't let this stuff ruin our day-to-day lives, because at the end of the day, it doesn't affect your, it has some effect, but not the fact that it should ruin your day every single day you wake up.
Right, right. You know, so I don't know. This, and these things managers can do. So, you know, if any of the managers are out there listening today, understand that as a manager, yes, you have a right to intervene, especially if they're not on their authorized break. They're in the lunchroom, you know, at lunch. That's one thing. But look, managers, in my opinion, Jamal, they got to set the tone.
I agree. All right?
It's got to be from the top and making sure that they respect the views of others. So the managers have to respect the views first.
Right.
Okay? And not take the sides.
Right.
Okay? And then it should all flow downhill from them.
Right.
All right?
Now, so what would you advise a manager to do that sees, like, arguments or a gathering of people? Or...
like any time else, is that there's a personality conflict where people have difference of opinions. Managers, that's where their skills have to come in.
Right.
You know, and the biggest thing for a manager, in my opinion, is just not to take sides.
Right.
Okay, because once you do that, you're going to alienate, you know, one or the other.
Right.
Because the one whose side you're not taking is going to get upset.
Right.
All right? So now you have end up with a morale issue.
So would it be best just to say, everybody get back to work?
Everybody get back to work. But suppose they're on their 30-minute lunch.
Right.
Okay, so if they're on a 30-minute lunch, but it gets, you know, it heats up and gets escalated,
right?
Then I think that's where, once again, the manager skills come in, and they got to say, okay, guys, you know, yes, you're at lunch. Yes, it's a very, you know, hot topic here.
Right.
But anything that could be disruptive in the work environment, especially when voices start to get raised, remember, we come back to violence in the workplace.
Right.
So if they've got a policy, a zero tolerance policy regarding any kind of violence in the workplace, they can always fall back on that policy.
Right.
All right, and that, so that makes a big difference as well.
Right.
But again, they got to remain neutral. Now, the other thing is they can encourage in-person interaction, with each other to have a polite discussion, which is okay.
Right.
But it's only when it gets out of hand. I think the biggest issue is that the employer, generally speaking, has got to establish a culture of civility.
Absolutely.
See, that's where, to me, it separates it out.
Right.
You know?
Can you stop people in the workplace from, you know, having like a button of the person that they want to vote for, or...
Well, see, now you're bringing up something else. So
you know what I mean?
Go.
Or something on their desk, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, those are called campaign buttons, and normally you do see those during the presidential election. I remember one time we had a situation where a client called us, because here's what it is. There was a manager, and then the employee went into the manager's office, got called into the office, or went into his office to see him. On his wall, Jamal, he had a picture of a baby crying. And then around the baby, okay, were the words. So it was like a, what's the word I'm looking for? It was like, well, let's just say it was like a button, like, okay, like a campaign button you're talking about. Seal.
Okay.
Seal is what I'm talking about. And then around the seal, so it's round, okay?
Right.
So around the baby were the words, had to do with the Democrats, actually, and the baby was crying, and it said the official seal of the Democratic Party, and it's the baby crying. So she was a diehard liberal, he was a diehard conservative, okay? And every time she went into his office, she would be upset to see this thing, okay? So, you know, so the client called us because she complained. Okay, that, you know, he said that, you know, he's expressing that, you know, this view that, you know, the Democrats are a bunch of crybabies, okay? Yeah. And he had it in a frame in his office, and he's a manager.
Right.
So they called us and said, you know, can he have that up? See, here we go with political opinions again.
But why can't people appreciate a good joke? I mean, if it's...
Well, it ain't a good joke to them.
Listen, I don't care who it is. If it's funny, it's funny, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem. Loosen up, everybody. You know what I mean? Just, well, come on. Appreciate a good joke.
We just got through talking about the fact that it's a very emotional subject for some people.
Right.
But look, let me ask you a question, Jamal. Okay? You're at the office. You get a call from a client on what I just told you.
Right.
What would you tell the client?
Well, from my standpoint, I would tell the client to take it down. You know what I mean? Because there's no room for it in the workplace. You know what I mean?
Would you consider that harassment? Because remember, the arguably is that harassment because.
See, it's all about the
political protection.
It's all about the person's perception too. So, you know what I mean. But if it's not work related, man, you know, maybe you should take it down.
If the baby had a smile on his face, would it have been an issue?
Hey, I don't know. I don't know. But if it's gonna be something that's gonna start a fight every day, if I was a manager, like, listen, let's go ahead and remove this.
Well,
thing.
Look, you know what? Here's the deal. Suppose she walked into his office, and instead of having a picture there of that seal that I just talked about, suppose when she went in there, it was a picture of a religious picture.
Wow.
And she's offended by it.
That's a tough one.
That's why I'm asking.
That's a tough one, because I guess, like, even if somebody had a cross in their office and somebody's offended by it. You know,
offended is offended.
Away from work, you know, I'm one of those people, man. Like, I could really care less if you offended by something. Go cry somewhere else. You know what I mean? But I know you can't have that attitude in work.
Can't have that attitude at work.
You know. I don't know. But see, that's a serious question, though, because there's some people that are just so over-the-top petty. You know, about every little thing that offends them. Like, you know, and we can't live in a world, even though we are living in a world, where we cater to everybody's pettiness. You know what I mean? So that's a tough one.
Well, here's what it is, Jamal. It's not so tough, okay? Because the answer really, in my opinion, is that, first of all, the religious picture, that's his private office, okay?
Right.
But here's the problem. It may be his private office, but who owns that office?
Right.
The employer.
Right.
Okay? So if somebody finds it offensive, in my opinion, I think it has to come down.
Right.
That's going to be the bottom line.
Wow.
So in the same token, because here's the other issue, litigation.
Right.
You want to spend $250,000 to prove that you were right and it should be, that's the point.
Not at all.
So I'm going to tell you what employers are going to do, man. They're going to turn around and roll over, you know, and say, okay, take it down. So how did we resolve that issue, in my opinion? What do you think the end result was?
Take it down.
Take it down. Okay? Take it down. And, the answer to taking it down was just simply because of the fact that somebody finds it offensive, okay? And I told you earlier, I don't believe that there's a protection for that. But if it's one that's going to create a morale problem,
okay,
that's how I look at it.
Right.
Okay? That's how I look at it. Because, again, you know, this whole thing with politics these days is so emotional that you don't want those kind of emotions in the work environment, because work is not going to get done.
Right.
That person is going to be talking to everybody about it. Hey, you know, do you see what's in it? So they're going to spend more time talking about that picture than getting work done.
So does this mean I would have to take down my New York Giants calendar because the Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl and somebody else might be offended in the cubicle next to me?
Actually, is what's funny is that from the sports standpoint, people have sports memorabilia up in their offices and everything. And there's no protection, Jamal.
Okay,
for that.
Okay.
You know, I'm not going to get into the one or two times the Giants have won versus how many times, you know, the Patriots have won. I'm a Washington Redskins fan. So for me, you know, we're fighting for our lives every year. But no, that's not a protected category. So that's the problem. Religion is a protected category.
Got it.
You know, your love of sports isn't.
Got it.
You know. Let's turn our attention right now to this last little piece in the last, you know, 5 minutes or so that we have to talk about how the terrorists have used the internet for terrorist purposes. Now, I have actually talked about certain parts of this that they used in the past, because I talk about propaganda and how they did the propaganda. So I've talked about that and how they've used the internet. What I didn't talk about was how they actually used the internet to finance their terrorist activities. So that's what's important, I think, for the listeners, you know, to hear as well. Because terrorist organizations and supporters, they find the use of the internet to finance acts of terrorism. The manner in which they do that, they do it to raise and collect funds. And we got to be paying attention to that. Now, there's a lot of resources, and there's four general categories, all right? And I don't want to miss any of these, so I'm going to give these to you. Direct solicitation, e-commerce, that's e-commerce, the exploitation of online payment tools through charitable organizations. Direct solicitation refers to the use of websites, chat groups, mass mailings, and targeted communications to request donations from supporters. Now, in addition to that, the websites may also be used online stores They offer books, studio, and video recordings. I've talked about video recordings on here, you know, as well. So you can see through all of this, they have online payment facilities offered through dedicated websites and communication platforms that makes it easy to transfer funds electronically. And in addition to that, Jamal, they also use PayPal.
Wow.
And they also use Skype. See, people don't realize that. All right? PayPal. Skype. So they actually are using what we put out there from a technology standpoint, and they're using that against us.
Wow.
You know, so again, you know, when you look at that, you say, okay, you know, but how do you get around it? That's the part. You may not even realize what you're doing.
Right.
And this business about charitable organizations, people, you know, have this charitable heart. But it's like when you go to the grocery store. You go to the grocery store, Jamal, have you seen where they say, hey, do you want to contribute $1 to whatever?
Right.
Let me just tell you, I found out through some research that, believe it or not, that $1 that you're giving to that grocery store and you say, yeah, sure, why not, or whatever the case may be, you're thinking that that dollar is going to go to that charity.
No.
It doesn't work that way.
It's only a percentage, right?
Yeah, but you know what the percentage is?
Was it 10%?
Yeah, they're only getting like 10%. That's the same way like when you see those little things next to the register that says, you know, so help support Jerry's Kids or whatever.
Right.
Those are all privately owned.
Right.
So all they got to do is give up 10% of what people are dropping in there.
Right.
And they get to keep 90% of it. And here, your heart was in a good place with all of this.
Right.
You know, so those are the kind of things that people need to look at. I don't give, when we make our charitable organizations, we give it to known organizations who we know.
Right.
And we give it to them directly. I'm not going through some intermediary.
Right.
Because you honestly just don't know.
Right.
All right. So the other thing I want the listeners to understand is that the online payment facilities can also be exploited through fraudulent means such as identity theft, credit card theft, wire fraud, stock fraud, intellectual property crimes also. All of that are considerations. You wonder where these people are getting the money from. Think about it. Where is all this money coming from? Jamal, you mentioned before we went on the air about the illegal cigarettes.
Right. I know that was another one, like these knockoff cigarettes or bootleg cigarettes that law enforcement tries so hard to crack down on.
Yeah.
We say, what's the big deal? You know, we getting cheaper. The greedy big companies are, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But you're not realizing this artificial vodka is going to some other group that you're not aware of. So that's why it's important that they have these crimes stopped.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want this. You don't want your hard-earned dollar going against us.
They're also doing, and I briefly mentioned this on the show before, but I'll do it again because it's been a while, training. So in recent years, what they found out is that terrorist organizations have increasingly turned to the Internet as an alternative training ground. See, before when we were talking about training ground, you'd have to go out there, go to the Middle East, and get your training.
Right.
On the ground, boots on the ground type of thing. But now is what they're doing is training people actually on the Internet. So they don't have to physically appear out there. You know what I'm saying? Go overseas.
Training them, training them to do what exactly?
Oh, they could train them how to shoot. They could train them how to make bombs. They could do all of those kind of things.
Wow.
You know, the ideologies that they're professing now.
Right.
They could do that by online training. So they're training you into their ideologies. The same way people get on the Internet just to get education.
Does the FBI, do they have a FBI group that tracks this kind
of
stuff?
Oh, please. All of that. It's not just the FBI, Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
There's a number of organizations that are out there. When I was working with the open source intelligence teams for the Sheriff's Department, we're out there looking. We're always on the Internet looking for things.
Right.
Keywords, buzzwords, things of that nature. That's how it happens.
Right.
And that's how, on the show, we've talked about how some of these, like the FBI, you know, catches these different organizations or different individuals getting ready to wreak havoc.
Right.
That's how they're doing it. Because we're out there on the Internet watching this stuff.
Wow.
That's why. Now, I can tell you another one. They have what they call Inspire. Inspire. Inspire is an online magazine allegedly published by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula with the stated objective of enabling Muslims to train for jihad. At home. And it contains a large amount of ideological.
Ideological.
Right. Thank
you. I got you.
Material aimed at encouraging terrorism You know, so that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Right.
This is education. So they're able to get all of this out there.
Right.
So look, to the listeners and everything, you've heard me say it in the past, is that you need to be careful. Watch the kids, okay? And watch even what you're doing with all of this, because you accidentally could be doing something that you don't even realize. But they're out there. So, you know, you got to know these websites when you're going to them, et cetera. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk on LA Talk Radio with Jamal. It's time to close out the show, but be sure to join us next week. If you like what you heard, by the way, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, and be safe. But more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, guys.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.